I am a family law attorney in Georgia, and so pretty much I'm going to be coming from the aspect of Georgia. And so in the state of Georgia, no, just because a father's name is on the birth certificate or he acknowledges the fact that he's the father of the child doesn't give that father legal rights to his child. Certainly he has not disputed paternity, and so paternity isn't an issue. But when it comes to actually establishing rights to the child and being able to have a say-so in what happens with your child, that is not done merely by your name being listed on the birth certificate or you saying, hey, this is my child, and she doesn't dispute that this is your child. You have to do something more, which is called legitimation.
Okay, what is legitimation?
Legitimation is really essentially the formalized legal process of establishing your legal rights to your child. It is done in the superior court of any state in the state of or any county in the state of Georgia. Typically, you would file that legitimation action in the county of residence of the mother of the child. And so that legitimation is the formalized process of letting the court know, hello, hey, court, I want to establish rights to my child. I want to be able to have a say-so in where my child goes to school. I want to be able to have a say-so in, you know, what activities or extracurricular activities my child is in. I want to be able to be a part of my child's educational process. And so that's what legitimation is in a nutshell. Initially, in all honesty, when I was in law school, I thought that I was going to be a contract attorney. I was like, oh, I love contracts. I loved it in school. And so that was my main focus in law school was contract law. Then I got out into, you know, the real world, real practice, and I got a job offer at a law firm who said that they were needing an attorney to do family law. And honestly, I never had taken family law in law school or taken the course. And so I figured it was a new opportunity for me to try it out. They told me they would train me on it, which I kind of got thrown into it because no one at the firm actually practiced family law. And so I just kind of learned it on my own. And learning it on my own is where the passion came from, and just being able to help affect change in families and households, being able to witness children have an actual invaluable relationship with their fathers, and just helping people reach a sense of new normal when they don't see it in that moment because they're either going through a divorce or they're going through a custody battle. But I think that with my line of work and my dedication to the practice of family law, I strongly push and urge that new normal, that new sense of security, that new sense of family. And so that's kind of how I got into family law. What the courts say or what the statute says is that the opportunity interest for an unwed father to develop a relationship with a child begins at conception, meaning you shouldn't wait to file for legitimation when your child is 14, 15 years old, because at that point, the court may determine that you have abandoned your opportunity interest or your opportunity to have a relationship with the child. So you want to do it as quickly as possible so that the court does not deem that you have abandoned your interest in the child. One thing that the court always says is that biology isn't destiny. And so a father doesn't have an absolute right to have his petition for legitimation granted simply because he's the biological father of the child. He has to do and show that he actually wants a relationship with a child and that he has taken necessary steps to establish that relationship. And one of those necessary steps is the process of filing the petition for legitimation. You know, I think that society has deemed that a child's relationship with a parent is centered only around that child's relationship with their mother. And I simply don't believe that's true. I think that it is so important to have this connection, this invaluable relationship with your dad. Your dad is supposed to be the stronghold. They are supposed to be the person that you look to, you know, when you are fearful about something or when you need advice about something. And so I think that I am of the opinion that there has to be this shift in the way we think about children's relationship with their fathers, and that it shouldn't just be that, you know, the father only sees his child every other weekend, or that he only gets a couple days out of the week with the child, because, you know, both parties made a conscious effort to have this child. They both made a conscious effort to, well, at least conceive the child, at least. And that means that both parties should be entitled to reap the benefits and the glory of all of these first things that happen with a child, the child's first words, the child's first steps, recitals, performances, games. And so I think that where you have this situation where, you know, we think that, oh, it's just moms that should be able to care for a child, it's only a mother that can take care of a child on a day-to-day basis, I don't agree with that. I think that fathers have the capability and the ability to do the exact same thing that a mom would do if given the opportunity to do so. So that's why I call it an invaluable relationship.
You said another term about abandonment, and you said the father wants to establish their custodial rights early so they won't – what was that term?
So that the court won't believe, or the court won't state that he has abandoned his opportunity interest. So
okay, abandoned his opportunity interest. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So naturally, when you think about it, you think that, well, if a father wants a relationship with his child, then he's going to do something right at the beginning, right at the onset, at the time that the child at least is actually born. Now, the court says that establishing that interest begins at conception, so meaning that the father is wanting to go to doctor's visits with mom, that he is going to Lamaze classes or taking some type of course on how to parent a child, or you know, reading books or making some steadfast effort at the time of conception. But a lot of times courts are looking at what the father does once the child is born, whether or not the father has attempted to be present at the hospital, whether or not the father has bought items for the child and secured a place to stay for the child and done the necessary steps that a parent would do in a situation in which maybe the mother and the father were already married. And so where they see that the father has not done this, or the father has not taken necessary steps to establish this relationship, then the courts will deem it as abandoned. So then the court won't legitimize the child, and then you won't be able to get visitation rights or parent, and I like to call it parenting time as opposed to visitation, because, you know, you're not visiting with your child. You're parenting your child during that time. And so you know, we think of visiting as visiting with other relatives, not the actual parents. So you will be stopped from doing that, from establishing those parenting rights, establishing those legal rights to the child, if the court determines that you've abandoned that interest.
Well, guys out there, if you're listening, you have a fighter on your side. Her name is Attorney Erin, and she's the practicing attorney with Family Matters Law Group. Let's talk a little bit about child custody. What kind of child custody rights should an unwed father ask the courts to grant them?
So there are two different types of custody. There is legal custody, and then there is physical custody. The easier one to explain is physical custody. So physical custody is who the child is with, who the child is actually with. And so with physical, there is primary physical, meaning the parent that has the child 51% or more of the time. And then you have the secondary physical custodian, which is the parent that has the child 49% or less of the time. And so depending on the circumstance, a father may simply ask that he be awarded secondary physical custody, because maybe he knows that, you know, the child should be with mom 51% or more of the time, or he feels that it may be better. Some fathers will ask for joint physical custody, you know, and with my clients that come in, I speak to them and heavily manage expectations when it comes to the issue of joint physical custody, because sometimes you have fathers that think, oh, well, I'm just going to ask for joint physical custody because I think that that's what I should get, but then they don't consider the fact that, you know, how will this joint physical custody affect the child going from home to home each week or each day, flipping back and forth from one household to another? And sometimes it starts getting, you have to get into the depth of what the current visitation or parenting time is with that parent. Is the dad already seeing the child 50% of the time, such that they kind of know how it already works and they kind of have a feel for the status quo of, okay, I get my daughter on this week and then she gets my daughter on this week. So that's another option is joint physical custody. So that's the physical custody side. Is you have a primary physical custodian, which is 51% or more. You have a secondary physical custodian, which is 49% or less. And then you have the option of joint physical custody, which is 50-50 or something close to 50-50. That's physical custody. Legal custody is what happens, we're going to be talking about making determinations or decisions for the child. What school will the child go to? Will the child be in private school or public school? What religion will the child be? Will the child be Hindu or will they be Muslim? What extracurricular activities will the child be involved in? Will they play piano or will they play football? And then what non-emergency medical decisions will be made? Will the child have braces or will they get Invisalign? So those are the things that legal custody deals with. And I always encourage my dads to ask for joint legal custody because I think that it's important for them to also be involved in making the decisions as it relates to the child. And so essentially, as far as legal custody, a father would be asking for joint legal custody, and then depending on the situation as it stands with how parenting time is going or how the physical custody side is going, that father would make the determination whether or not they're going to be asking for primary physical, secondary physical, or joint physical custody. So the standard in the state of Georgia is the father will have every other weekend, and then the parties will alternate holidays. At my law firm, we do more than just ask for the standard. We push for more parenting time because we believe fathers should have more time with their children, that they shouldn't just be relegated to this every other weekend or this just holiday visits with their child. And so at our firm, we ask for the first, third, and fifth weekends of every month from Thursday to Sunday or from Thursday to Monday. And then on those second and fourth weeks of the month, we ask that father be able to get a weeknight visit with the child so that it doesn't fully disturb the child's weekly school routine, but at least the child gets to see their father one night out of the week, so that dad isn't going a whole week without seeing his child and is only seeing the child, you know, on the first, third, and fifth weekend or on every other weekend. And you'll hear me, I define weekends by the actual week number. I will say first, third, and fifth. I don't say every other because that shortchanges my father's from parenting time that they could have with the child. Because there are some months out of the year, you know, that have 5 weeks. And so if we say every other, then there's going to be an opportunity where mom gets that fifth week and dad won't get it. So instead, we always ask for the first, third, and fifth so that he is at least getting more time in the month and that he's also getting a weekday parenting time. And so that's what our office does. If a father went into court and was just seeking what the standard was, and that would look like every other weekend, as I stated, and then the parties would alternate holidays. Mom would have Christmas this year, dad would have Christmas the next year, and so on and so forth for all the other holidays. If mom goes out to the child support services office and files for a child support, she will get it. She will get that child support even though you don't have a right to see your child, even though she can withhold the child from you. And so child support is really serious in the state of Georgia. The courts believe that, or the legislature believes that children need to be supported, which I agree that they need to be supported too. But sometimes where we have fathers who have kind of been hauled into court because mom has filed a action with child support services, fathers aren't being properly represented. They are going in there and getting railroaded in the amount of money that they have to pay in child support. Child support first considers both parties' gross monthly income. That means their income before taxes has been taken out. And I know sometimes that raises people's eyebrows because they're like, well, why would the court consider my gross monthly income when I don't even see that money? Well, that's just what it is. They're going to consider your gross monthly income. They're going to look at what you've made prior to all of your taxes and everything else being taken out, and that's how they're going to make a determination of how much you are to pay in child support. There's so many different intricate details about child support, about how you can configure the numbers and work the numbers so that it's favorable. But that would obviously be something that would have to be done in like a consultation because it takes quite some time. But definitely child support isn't something that a father should do on his own. If anything, that should be something that he consults with an attorney about because there are so many different nuances to child support and what amount he's required to pay, what deviations he can get based on things that he's doing for the child. And if he has other children, the court will consider that as well. So, but that's the kind of general basis of child support. Ultimately, you are required to pay child support for your child. Even if you're not under an order to pay child support, let's just say mom hasn't went down to child support office and said that she wants you to pay child support. You should still be doing things for your child and keeping receipts and proof of the things that you do and the monies that you expend for your child each month. Always keep a detailed report. And if you are giving mom money, never, ever, ever, ever give her cash. Write a check, do a money order, and I sometimes don't even suggest money orders. I would say get a cashier's check or write an actual personal check because sometimes with money orders it's hard to trace who that money order actually went to because, you know, if you try to subpoena maybe the company that you got the money order from, they probably don't have a record of it. And so always keep detailed proof and evidence of the money that you spend and the money that you're giving to mom, and never let that money be in cash. So when the court calculates child support, like I said, the first thing that they're going to look at is they're going to look at the parent's gross monthly income. The next thing that they're going to look at is whether or not father is paying for health insurance for the child. So who's covering the child on their health insurance? And if mom is covering the health insurance, then she will get that credit on her portion of the child support worksheet, and dad will be responsible for either half or some percentage of how much she is paying for health insurance. The court is also going to look at whether or not these children are in daycare or after school or before school care. And if there is a cost associated with that, if dad is paying for that cost, then he gets a credit on his side, and then it will reduce his child support amount. But those are the three main things that the court first starts off with is the gross monthly income, health insurance for the child, and any work-related child care expenses like daycare, aftercare, before care. And then once those three things are input into the child support worksheet, then we start, you know, getting all fancy and looking at whether or not the children are in some type of extraordinary extracurricular activity or whether or not father is providing monies to the mother for her rent where the children are residing. The court is going to also look at whether or not the father has children that he's already under an order to pay child support for, meaning if he has children from another relationship that he was already ordered to pay child support for, he can get a deviation for that. They will look and see or make a determination if dad has children actually living in the home with him at that time that he is responsible for providing support for, not stepchildren, but either children that, you know, are biologically his or that he has adopted, and they will give a credit for that. And then there are so many other different facets and nuances, okay, like I said, that the court will consider. I often get that question posed to me, and, you know, I think that my response is always, well, you know, if you broke your foot, would you try to fix your foot yourself? No, you would go to a podiatrist, or you would, you know, go to an orthopedic surgeon to get that foot fixed. And so it's the same thing with law. If you're not familiar with law and you haven't gone to law school or passed the bar, then you need an attorney, because what is going to happen is that if you go into court by yourself or as a pro se litigant, the court is going to hold you to the same exact standard that they do an attorney. They're not going to cut you any slack. They're going to make sure – they're going to want you to be able to properly admit documents into evidence. And if you can't – if you don't know how to properly admit those documents into the evidence, then guess what? The court isn't going to consider it. They're not going to show you how to do it. They're not going to teach you how to ask the other person questions. They're not going to tell you how to object to things. And they're not going to explain any instance of the law with you. They're going to judge your case or adjudicate your case based on how you present it, and they are going to expect that that presentation is similar to what an attorney would do. So I always advise people that they need attorneys, and, you know, but then on the same note, I don't want people to, you know, ever think that I'm trying to sway them just because I am an attorney. And so I say to them, you know, certainly if you want to attempt to do it pro se, try it out, but likely you are going to come to find that you can't do it on your own, especially when you're thinking about the custodial aspect and the child support aspect. Those are things that you can't do on your own. And so getting the advice from an attorney would behoove you tremendously.